Hi, I'm Julie.
And I'm Liz. We are business owners turned podcasters.
This show gives you the permission and tools to create your courageous second act.
We call this the Afterglow. Welcome to the Afterglow. Joining us today is one of Canada's leading parenting experts, Jennifer Kolari. Jennifer is a child and family therapist with a busy practice based in Toronto and San Diego. She's an international speaker, founder of Connected Parenting, and author of Connected Parenting, How to Raise a Great Kid, as well as You're Ruining My Life, But Not Really, Surviving the Teenage Years with Connected Parenting. That last title, Jennifer, really highlighting the wit and down-to-earth wisdom that you bring to your parenting guidance. So thank you so much for being here. We're excited to have you.
I'm excited. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I have a little story, Jennifer, about my experience with Connected Parenting about 10 years ago. I remember, and I'm going to try and make this long story short, but I picked up my kids from school. It was the last day of school, and I was super excited. A new ice cream store had just opened up down the street from us, and I was like, I'm going to surprise the kids and treat them to ice cream. So as we were walking there, my eldest, who was, I think he was 8 at the time, he started getting a little bit belligerent and started getting angry and being mean to us and not being very cooperative, and I couldn't figure it out. And we were so close to the ice cream store, and in my mind I thought, you know what, like, what kid does not want ice cream? First of all, how ungrateful could he be? Like, I'm a super mom. I decided this is going to be like the greatest thing to do on the last day of school. And when we got closer to the ice cream store, he just planted himself down on the pavement and like refused to move. And I could not figure it out. And I just wanted to like launch into this, like, you know, thing about how ungrateful he was and what the hell was his problem. And he was ruining it for everybody else. And I had just picked up Connected Parenting, the book, and I had just started reading it, and I, for some reason, this like ray from the heavens above shone down on me, and I became a part of the Connected Parenting principles, and I sat down on the pavement with him, like right on the ground, and I was like, buddy, what's going on here? You know, tell me about what's going on. And he mentioned that the earlier in the morning before we had left for school, I had promised him that he could go on his video games right after school. And this was not a normal practice, because normally after school, he would either have to do homework or it would have to wait for the weekends. And in this circumstance, this was the last day of school. So I promised him. So he spent the entire day thinking about this. So when I picked him up, he could give a shit about ice cream. He wanted to go home. And so as soon as I was like, oh my God, buddy, I'm so sorry. I remember that promise now. And I'm so sorry that I forgot about it. Can we get ice cream and we'll get you home right away? He just like completely lost all his defenses.
Yeah.
And he, you know, gave me a hug, got the ice cream, was happy to eat it, totally changed his tune. And I was like, how on earth was that not a part of just an everyday thing that I do with my kids? This was like a revelation to me, this part of Connected Parenting. So thank you, first of all, for bringing that into my world. I really appreciate it. And it just shines a light on how we as parents are in this big world of what we're doing and covering the finances and taking care of, well, right now, COVID and all that stuff. But in their world, it's a lot smaller. And what is so meaningful to them is completely different to us, right?
Yes.
And so we have to pay attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really powerful moment. And that's really what connected parenting comes down to. It's like meeting your child or anybody. This doesn't work just on kids. This works on spouses, husbands, wives, nasty neighbors, mother-in-laws. It's kind of like having a little superpower. Mm-hmm. It's very counterintuitive though. Cause as you described the ice cream story in the beginning, it's like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. We're going for ice cream. How dare you? Like, I thought of this great thing that we could do together. And that's often what happens to us as human beings, not just with our kids. When we have an idea of what we're doing for someone, the gap between how we think it should go and how it actually goes causes a lot of stress and anxiety for us. So it's a counterintuitive technique, which is the trickiest part, right? Because you're going to feel like doing something else. And that's because of the limbic brain, which we'll get into. But you really have to be using your frontal lobe, which is a different part of the brain. And that's where you're responding to your child instead of reacting to your child. But it is counterintuitive.
Well, tell us about the heart of your approach. And so we've heard a couple of your terms. There's the CALM acronym. There's connecting before centering. But tell us about the heart of your approach.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really daring to be there. It's daring to be in that space with that other person without your own agenda, without making it a teaching moment. You get to later. I'll talk about that in a second. But in the moment of deep connection, it's really just being present with them and not applying what you think, what you wish they did, what you think they should do to it. It's just being present in where they're at.
You use the word dare, right? Because it is. It's an act of courage, right?
Yeah, you have to dare to be there. And for a mom, seeing our child upset is very layered, right? If we look at the ice cream thing, it's like, oh my God, is my kid a brat? Have I created a brat? Have I created a person who's just ungrateful? Like, this is horrible. How is he going to have a life? How is anyone going to love him? Like, we go there, right? We see their lives flashing before our eyes. We also, feel bad for ourselves. Like, I do so much and now I'm doing this and it's not good. Like, we just have this layer of information, right? So it's being able to just push that aside. You get to bring it back because it's all relevant. But daring to be there in that moment in your child's sadness, which for a parent, and I think for moms especially, to watch your child suffer about anything, even stupid things like ice cream, is very painful for us. So we immediately want to soothe it. We immediately want to make them feel better, which is actually robbing them in some ways of some really important experiences they can have to self-soothe, to sit with it, to realize, you know what, your plans can change. You can have a really strong idea of how you want your day to go, and it can turn out differently, and it can be okay. And guess what? You can be okay. Helping to teach your children and ourselves that you can never control conditions. Ever, 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 ever. And the more you try to control conditions, the crazier you make yourself, the more anxious you make yourself, the more depressed you make yourself. You can only control your emotional response to conditions. And that's where real freedom lies. That's where real strength lies. And that's where really good parenting lies. Helping your kids figure that out is life-changing.
Your parenting is hard, though. It's so hard. And you talked about recently, especially parenting getting harder with, you know, this day and age, social media, all of that. But it is so hard. Why is it so hard?
It's so hard. It is. Well, it's funny. And this is a joke, okay? I'm not serious when I say this. But sometimes because parenting is hard, and I find it really hard. And sometimes there's moments where you think, I hate this. I really do. I hate it.
I hate them?
I've had so many parents, so many moms in my office who are literally crying and say, I love my child, but I hate them. Mm-hmm. I really do. And so I joke and I say, my next book's going to be Forget It, Get a Dog. There's sort of this idea that we're all sold that you're going to have these kids and it's just going to be lovely. And there's moments where it is, and the joy and the love is inexplicable that you can feel. But like anything, there are dual sides to it. In order to love something and someone that much, you have to experience the opposite, which is the fear of losing that, right? There's all this duality in it. And that's a hard thing to deal with. And kids are impossible. Here's the reason I think it's so impossible to be a parent. There's a kind of a global reason, bigger reason, which is I think parenting has shifted so much in the last 25 to 30 years. I think, and it's so confusing. The information out there is so conflicting. Mm-hmm. And it's what I'm the most proud of about connected parenting, actually, because I feel like I bring it into the center. I bring it into the middle. But if we think about how our parents parented us, it was very different. It was like, go play outside. I don't care if you have nothing to do. It's my turn to watch the TV. Get up, right? And it wasn't this, I don't remember being traumatized by that. The parents got the TV. And I have very loving, connected parents, but they didn't play with me that much. Like sometimes we went on vacation, they'd be in the pool with me or something. But most of the time it's like, go outside, right? And you played outside with a large group of kids and you figured out who you were and when to be heard and when to listen. And you just figured stuff out. Kids stopped walking to school and they stopped having independence. And so there's a lot of changes. And that, so now if you try to parent that way and very strict, right, very tall, you'll be fine, right? That, and I think we've had a backlash. I think there were things about that as children we didn't love. We didn't necessarily feel heard. You know, there was a lot of, if you're a bully at all, you'll be fine. I was bullied too. Suck it up. You'll be okay kind of stuff, right? And that's, so there were a lot of things that weren't great about that, but there were some things that were great about that. Independence, figuring stuff out on your own, a clear sense of hierarchy, adults, kids, like that was clear. Mm-hmm. You know, a really good example is if you go into a store, if I went into a store with my parents and I touched something and the storekeeper yelled at me and said, don't touch that. My mother would turn to me and say, don't touch that. What are you doing? Keep your hands to yourself, right? Now, if you walk your child into a store and someone says something, now the shopkeeper says, don't touch something. And the mother or the dad will say, how dare you? Talk to my child that we are never coming to this store again. There's a very different energy, right? So the hierarchy has flipped. And then I think there's kind of, so if you try to parent your kids right now in that old fashioned way, they will literally look at you and go, no,
yeah.
On call in children's aid. Like, no, it just won't work. And then there's sort of more, and lovely, beautiful, newer kind of thinking around being very aware and aware of your own traumas and your own issues and how you're putting that on your children. And that's really important to be aware of. But with that was also, and this is going back several years, this idea, you know, no timeouts and don't, you know, you're going to ruin your children's sense of self and they need to negotiate and they need to have a voice and they need agency. And that there's been some things that haven't worked about that. The more you sort of know that spiritual stuff and you know that you shouldn't be doing, the more when you do, you lose it and yell, the worse you feel now. So I almost feel like moms in particular are, that's making them feel worse about themselves. Mm-hmm. So I know all this beautiful stuff and I'm still horrible. Like I hate myself. I have so mm-hmm. many moms who like literally cry themselves to sleep at night. I'm a horrible person. So that I think that's why it's so hard. It's unrealistic that you're going to just be in this beautiful space all the time. Kids are tough. Parenting is hard. It is miserable sometimes. And it'll take you to the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And people love to talk about the highest of highs. Oh, my daughter's in this and we're doing this. And oh, we had a beautiful this and that. They don't talk about when they're screaming and yelling in the house and you want to lock yourself in the bathroom and cry on the floor for 2 hours. We don't talk about that. We're afraid to talk about that. We're embarrassed to talk about that. But most households, that there's a lot of stuff going on like that. And that's part of being human. It's part of being alive. And you work it out. And it's all that adversity, that negative stuff is actually part of what helps your kids be full, integrated human beings. So I think it's time to get kind of real, right? And what I love about connected parenting is we bring both together. So it's about compassion. It's about understanding the ice cream. It's about putting your own agenda aside just for a minute, right? So after you mirror, then you say, but you know what, buddy, this is what I was thinking. I was thinking this is going to be an awesome surprise.
So and tell us about that. You just mentioned mirror. So tell us about that. What are the steps or what is the actual approach that you're talking about?
Yeah, I love it. And you gave such a good example with the ice cream, but I call it the calm technique. It's literally like having a superpower and it's medicine. I don't know how else to explain it to you. So it's basically when you deeply listen to anybody, not just your child, but anyone, oxytocin, opiates, and endorphins release. And these are very powerful reward chemicals, basically. Oxytocin is also a stress hormone it's a neurotransmitter / hormone. And when it releases, it blocks cortisol. And it strengthens the immune system. How important is that right now? It speeds up neuroplasticity. It helps with kind of emotional integration and emotional organization. And when oxytocin releases, when you speak to someone and you have that moment and there's that beautiful connection, oxytocin releases both in their brain and in yours. So you get that bounce back. You get that same bounce back. So, I mean, it's medicine. I don't know how, and it's free and you don't need a prescription and you don't run out of it. You just have to be able to find that place in yourself where you use it. And the more you use it, the less you need to use it, ironically. So when you use these techniques often and it strengthens the relationship and the bond. So once in a while you can flip out and go, are you kidding me? I'm bringing you ice cream and this is what's happening. And because you mirror the rest of the time and there's such a connection, your child's more likely to go, yeah, I know. I'm sorry, mom. Right. That's the irony, right? Is as you build on these techniques, it gets easier and easier and stronger. So the calm technique is really using four things. You're going to connect. You're going to use your face. You're going to use your body. You're going to use that moment in time to just put your agenda aside, whatever that is. Don't talk to me like that. How dare you? You're a brat. Whatever you're thinking, park it. And then you're going to take, so the agenda is aside. The look on your face is going to match their affect fairly similarly. It can't be exact because that's weird, but it's got to be very similar, right? And it's not happening to you. You understand that it's happening to them, because if you get too wound up in it, then your child's going to think, oh my gosh, I can't handle my emotional issues and my mother's, right? So it really has to be happening to them. And then you're going to use your words, right? People don't remember what you say. They remember how you make them feel. That's the bottom line. That's what people walk away with. So in this moment, you can paraphrase, you can summarize, you can clarify, and you can wonder out loud. So if we use your ice cream example, you can, you would clarify first. So, you know what, help me understand this, because you seem so upset about this. And in my head, this is a good thing, but you're a good kid. You don't do this normally. So I'm missing something. What piece of this am I missing? And then he would have told you, well, I thought I was going to go home and play my video game, right? You can paraphrase. This isn't fair. I don't want to go for ice cream. You say, okay, I'm missing something, but like you're being dragged somewhere, even somewhere fun where you don't want to go. Right? So you can paraphrase, you can summarize, you know what, this is weird because this happened last week too, when I took you somewhere that I thought was a good place and it wasn't, right? So you can pull past experiences together, which really shows your child that you pay attention and you're listening. And then you can wonder out loud, because it might not have been about that at all. He might've been upset about not getting invited to a birthday party, or he was still upset from the night before, or some other argument that you had. Sometimes you can link it back. You can't always know that, but through this process, your child gets better and better at knowing themselves as well. And then the final thing, the M, is when you've pulled all those things together, you've actually had a moment where you have mirrored. And when you mirror, the mirror neuron cells in the brain actually get excited, because they're feeling this joining, right? They're feeling like there's a resonance, like a tuning fork. You're suddenly both resonating exactly the same way, which calms them down chemically. And the more you do this, the more resilient and emotionally organized your child actually becomes. You're also getting the bounce back.
It's almost like your nervous systems are co-regulating through that process. Jennifer, you mentioned moms a couple times. One that moms, we have this tendency to really want to nurture, and so sometimes that, you know, gets in the way, or wanting to take away the pain. And then also you mentioned the self-judgment piece, or the shame. I'm not doing a good job. So what advice do you give specifically to moms? I know you work with kids and both parents, but what advice do you give specifically to moms?
Well, so there's a lot of different things. I mean, first of all, is if you're going to use this calm technique on your children, use it on yourself. Mm-hmm. Honestly, that's so important. When you're getting mad at yourself that you blew it with the ice cream thing or whatever it is, use the calm technique on yourself. You know, I'm tired and I'm exhausted and I'm trying to help people all the time, and it just felt crummy that I planned this great thing and it fell flat, and it's okay to feel bad about that. And it's okay.
Can I just say how important that is? Because for me, I had to do some of that work for myself before I could do it for my kids. I just really want to say how important that is.
Truthfully, you can't do it for anyone else until you do it for yourself. Like, that's really, really important. And if you're not going to show yourself the same courtesy, mm-hmm. you're going to be in big trouble. And you're also modeling things to your child you don't want modeled. Mm-hmm. Do you want to be modeling that you're like never caring for yourself? And when we honor ourselves, we're teaching our children something really important. And we're teaching people how to treat us, including our family. So that would be one really important thing. The other, I think, comes down to really understanding that as human beings, we only have two emotions, love and fear. Right? Love is easy. We all know love. We all speak love. Fear takes many different forms. Anger, jealousy, yelling, cheating, lying, temper tantrums, violence, gossip, all of that stuff, that's all fear. Anyone who was yelling, anyone who was angry, anyone who was upset is in pain, and they are in fear, right? So when we parent from a place of fear, it's never going to work out that well. When we parent from a place of love, it is going to work well. When you parent from a place of love, you're listening and understanding. You may not agree. You may still think that's still kind of obnoxious that you're taking it for ice cream and you want to play video games. Because mirroring isn't about agreeing. It's just about getting. In his world, there was nothing more important than that video game, right? And he thought about it all day. So in our adult perspective, we can say, well, that's ridiculous. You're going to be home in half an hour. What difference does it make? But in his world, it's a big difference, right? So if you're parenting from a place of love where you're connecting and you're understanding first, and then you can come in and be like tough. You can say, but you know what? The stomping, how mean you were, that's not okay. that's not great. I like myself way too much to be treated this way. And I believe in you and I know you're a way nicer person than that. So that we have to deal with, but see how that's centered? That's so centered in this place of love, not, you know, you can't behave that way. And you're like that. There's just such a different energy there. And when it's that energy, which you really kind of have to ground yourself, it'll work most of the time, if not all of the time. Mm. It's just a little counterintuitive.
That saddens me that it's counterintuitive, because we should all be just operating from a place of love, right? It's, I mean, love isn't a new thing. It's been around forever, and we all know how to feel it and be it and do it. With operating from a place of love, you talk about empathy, you talk about compassion, you talk about ruthless compassion. Why is that empathy, which I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't even know what the word empathy was. It was sympathy, but I didn't know what empathy was. Mm-hmm. And so why is that so important to this process?
Well, so listen, I think it's important to life. I mean, it's who we are. It's the language that all of us speak. And I think, unfortunately, because you said it, like, it's so intuitive, we get it, but it can be so easily drowned out by fear. So we live in a very fear-based world. We did before this whole isolation thing, knowing where your kid is all the time, like crazy stuff. And the news and, you know, what you eat for dinner could kill you. Tune in at 6 to find out what it is. Like, it's just fear, 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 fear. And we've kind of all, and fear is contagious, first of all. When you're afraid, you are limbic. So when you're afraid, you're operating the different part of your brain. So the limbic system and the amygdala is the part of the brain that cares about survival. It cares about whether or not you're in danger and pretty much nothing else. Right. In order to be operating in a place of love, you have to have your frontal lobe on. Right.
So yeah, can you break that down for us just a little bit more? Can you
I will.
Just a little science lesson on that?
Sure. So the frontal lobe is responsible for emotional regulation, taking perspective, motivation, shifting attention, deciding what's dangerous and what's not. It's the part of the brain that's in charge of higher order thinking. Now, it takes 25 years to grow a frontal lobe.
So our kids don't have it.
No,
not
they
fully
have
developed.
Versions of them, and they get, you know, slightly more of a frontal lobe with every year that they get older, but they don't have a fully formed frontal lobe. So that's the job of the frontal lobe. The job of the midbrain is survival. Can this kill me? If your heart is racing, if you're breathing fast, your brain doesn't care that it's your kid who left his backpack in the middle of the hallway or didn't want ice cream or is telling you to shut up. It sees danger. And that's why you will respond with fight or flight, which is why later you'll be crying on the bathroom floor feeling like a horrible person. But your brain did what it's supposed to do. It thought you were in danger, so it shut off. It literally severed contact with the frontal lobe. So all of the beautiful podcasts you've done and all the parenting people you've talked to and all the books you've read, they're locked out, literally locked out. And now you're limbic, right? The other part of this that's so important is that the frontal lobe, and you said it, our kids don't have much of a frontal lobe. You are a frontal lobe substitute. You are not a parent. You are a substitute frontal lobe. Mm. That's your job, to inhibit, organize, regulate, motivate, modify. That's your job, which is why all day long you're saying the same thing 100,000 times to your kids. So that's when parents say to me, why do I have to say something 50,000 times? Because you're providing that brain function. So we do this all the time in our own brains. I shouldn't eat that. I don't need to eat that. I should turn Netflix off. I should really get to work. I shouldn't really talk that way. I should, you know what? I shouldn't make this about me. We do that all the time. We're constantly doing that. Our frontal lobe is pushing down on our midbrains all the time, because we have a frontal lobe that we can do that with. And we're also frontal lobes for our kids, right? Now, the other thing that's so important to know about your children is they will also regulate off of you. So they need you to be that frontal lobe, but when they're not getting electricity from their brain stem to their frontal lobe, they're gonna wanna uptick it. They're gonna wanna like light their brain up. How do they do that? By pissing you off, or bugging their sibling, or doing something they know that they shouldn't do. They want a blast of adrenaline. Adrenaline is a stimulant that acts on the frontal lobe the same way Vyvanse, Concerta, Ritalin does. right? So they're literally getting a hit off of us. So when we stay calm and we stay calm and we stay calm and then we snap and we yell, just before we yell, they get a blast of adrenaline. They're medicating themselves on us. So we're part of this system. We're part of how our kids regulate, which is why they will come at us and come at us and come at us until we snap. And then we feel horrible and we start the cycle again, right? So when you line up with love and you decide that you're going to parent from this level kind of place of love, and your kids will test you while you make this energetic shift with your kids, eventually they'll calm down and they'll just know and they won't do it as much. And there's ways to get around this. You can do what's called adrenaline play. Turn into a monster and chase them and, you know, have your phone on with music and then pause it and they have to freeze. And there's a million different games that you can be playing that stimulate that adrenaline release that are also bonding and fun, that don't involve them making you so mad that you scream.
I do have to say that shooting Nerf guns at your children is a lot of fun.
That right?
Actually a lot of fun.
We just bought a bunch of those.
When you really break it down that way, like it's almost like extra motivation, right? To really develop the capacity to be calm, centered, grounded in front of your children. Because it's not only, you're not only doing it for yourself, but you're actually lending your children that frontal lobe or that nervous system regulation that they need.
Yes, to be happy. Absolutely.
And well. And, you know, what's interesting for Julie and I, you know, this part of this podcast, what we're really trying to do is just create the ability for women primarily, that's our audience, to live a life that's really aligned with who they truly are. And, you know, part of that is this capacity to be with our emotional experience, especially for women, right, to tap into emotions like anger, right, to make space for that, which traditionally in our culture has not been allowed, and for boys to just be with their emotions in the first place. You know, it seems like the work you're doing is foundational, starting with children in our homes, to the type of long-term work we want to see in our society. Do you think about that ever?
I do. I absolutely do. There's so much to unpack there. I mean, I have this secret. It's not so secret. I literally have this fantasy that as each home figures this out and the light just gets a little brighter in each home, right? That's actually how we're going to change the world. You know, what chance do we have if we can't figure it out and under our own roof, right? So I do believe that's changing the world. And I actually think that kids are literally coming in a little bit different. I do. I think they're spicier and smarter and sassier, and they know their own power, and they know that the old way of parenting just isn't right. It just doesn't feel good, but they're too powerful to be just running around because they can't regulate because they don't have a frontal lobe. But I feel like we have this important job to make each of our homes kind of work, right? And reflect the kind of world that we want. You can't control the whole world, but you can control yours in your house, making that a living, breathing thing in your own homes for your children so they take it out there with them. And that's, you know, it sounds daunting, but I really think that's important. And you're helping to raise these kids, I call them gladiators, who I think are literally built to challenge paradigms and tear down stupid things that don't work and help us flip upside down. Because it's interesting, this virus right now in the world, and it's an awful thing and it's a scary thing, and I don't mean to diminish the agony that people are going through if they're losing people. The flip side, and there's always a flip side, is that families are spending more time together. They're connecting more. They're realizing, I didn't need to do that. I don't need to go there all the time. That really wasn't what was making life amazing. This is. Even children are telling me this. Mm-hmm. Right? They're playing board games and they're hanging out more with their parents and they're finding a simplicity to life that we lost, really lost. And never in the world have we all been facing the same problem at the same time, no matter where you come from and who you are. And it's challenging three really massive paradigms, the financial system, the healthcare system, and the education system, right? So I think these kids are going to help us turn it all upside down. We just have to raise them to a place where they can live and move within the system without crushing their spirit, but keep the spirit strong enough that they're like, no, why? Why would I do it that way? That doesn't make sense. Like, we want them to be asking those questions.
So it's interesting that you talk about that, about raising these gladiators, because you know, the difference between what we see now, in particular in our social constructs of men versus women, our men are typically these gladiators, and maybe not necessarily possessing the good qualities of the gladiators all the time, but women are not necessarily encouraged to come out and be gladiators because then they're seen as bitches or they are unemotional. I mean, we look at Hillary Clinton, we look at Michelle Obama, we look at these leaders who have been torn down for their strengths. And so how do we raise women? How do we raise our girls to embrace and embody these qualities as well?
It's such an important question, and I have a big answer for that. And it's interesting because a gladiator girl, and I don't want to say like that they're more powerful, but in some ways, a powerful girl, like you ask any teacher or anyone who works in a group home, they'll take five behavioral boys over one behavioral girl. Like girls are like fierce, like really fierce. Like really.
I think we're angry. I think there's some anger. I don't know. I think
there's power. There's I can't even put it into words. And I can, over my years working in children's mental health, I think my most powerful kids were girls for sure. And that's not to say that boys don't have this. It's just, I think, I don't know what that is. It's just something I've noticed over the years. And if you talk to people in mental health, they'll say the same thing. And I do think, you know, I have my youngest, Olivia, who's 16 now, was full-on gladiator. And I know for sure that teachers were harder on her, that if she had been a boy, I wouldn't have gotten certain phone calls. I just know it, right?
It just wasn't acceptable for her.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I'm aware of that. And it's interesting. I went to an amazing talk, I don't even remember when this was, but 6 months ago, and Elizabeth Gilbert was speaking. She's amazing. And she was talking about the divine male and the divine female. And I've since been doing a ton of research on this. And I think this will answer this question. So it's really interesting because everything's about polarity. Everything polarizes, right? So a profane male would literally be the smash and grab. It's mine. You know, I'm going to dominate you. I'm going to take what I want. Like, I don't know, not too hard to imagine a pretty famous person right now who's like that, right?
Yeah, I got one in mind.
Right, me too. And then on the exact opposite end of that is the profane female. And that is the woman that's like, oh, it's okay. You know what? Don't worry. I'll just do it. Don't bother. Right? It's making all of this space and all of this room for that super powerful negative energy to have space. Right? And what's so interesting, and when I do marital counseling, I see this over and over again. When people are stressed, the profane male comes out, the profane female comes out. And they're both responsible for how ugly things can get in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. Because the more profane the female is, the more she sees this monster in her, and it can flip. It's not always male, female. The more awful and shamed the person who's really angry is and doubles down, right? So it's this crazy energy that you polarize like this. And this can happen in a lot of families. And you see this with parenting a lot. Like one parent is like, this is ridiculous. We need to do something about this, blah, blah. And the other one's like, oh, he's tired. He's scared, right? It's the same energy. I've been talking about this for a long time, but I love this idea of this energy. And then there's the divine male. So that would be a male energy that's really centered and understands perspective and compassion and empathy, a Buddha, Jesus. Like we can think of lots of archetypes of, you know, really divine men, right? And then there's the divine female, which is my favorite. This is like this female energy that it's like, you just are nobody. Mary Poppins really is the best example I can give you of like a perfect, right? Like a divine female. You don't mess with Mary Poppins. She doesn't have to yell at you. She just has to look at you and you're like, right? And if you think about Elizabeth Gilbert gave this example of, if you think about like horses, right? There's no male stallion that, you know, runs the herd. It's the lead mare. And she doesn't fight anybody to become the leader. She just has this presence, right? And the herd now doesn't worry about who's chasing me. They just look at her. And if she's drinking her water and she's relaxed, then the whole herd is relaxed. So this idea of finding, helping your girls and your boys be centered in this divine energy, right? And this is true in all of us. It's not just gender-based.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about this, because we've done a few podcast interviews now, and there's some emergent themes coming out of some of these conversations. One about the divine feminine is definitely coming up for some people's spirituality. And then this other one that you mentioned about these little gladiators, and you know, it kind of ties in with an interview we did with Vicky Saunders recently. She talks about how the world is broken and, you know, we need to disrupt things. And it's almost like you're saying these disruptors are being born, you know, and then we have to learn how to raise these disruptors, which is a very exciting thing to think about, right? That, yeah, you know, these are being born to help take care of our world.
Oh, it's just such a delicious slant on things. Like, it's been so pathological up to now, all these labels. And that's why I love the term gladiator. Like, it's they're just little fighters, heroes. And to have that conversation with your kids, you have this amazing energy. Like, you're here to do something really special and really amazing, but you still have to work within this system, or you're going to get booted out of the system, and then you're not going to be able to do anything, right? Yeah. So, and that's, I mean, that's, you know, that conversation when they get older. But so that means as mothers, staying in that divine energy, channel Mary Poppins, because if there, that's just kind of perfect, right? Maybe a teensy bit more softness from the connected parenting point of view, but that's kind of the energy. And for dads to really also have that divine energy. And that's why I love connected parenting. And I've been doing this for 20 years. This model's been in the making, and it really forces both parents, whoever you are and whatever combination, to come to the middle, right?
How did you, so this connected parenting for 20 years, that's, you know, you've been doing this for a while, and it would have been even more counterintuitive back then.
Yeah.
Did you find the ability to just trust yourself and know that this is what you wanted to work on? Were you born confident and courageous, or is this something you had to work
really good
on?
Question. I don't remember any moment where I think I've kind of always been like this a little bit. I remember wanting to do this work. I knew I wanted to be a psychologist, social worker, like from the time that I was 14 or 15. I just knew. I don't know. I mean, I think if I look back, like, I can see some of the threads of where it came from. But I know that when connected parenting was born, I can tell you about that moment. So I had been working, I'd finished my undergraduate work, I think. And I wanted to take some time off and just work in like the field and work with real families and real kids. And I ended up just in the newspaper finding this ad to work in this group home. And this is a group home for street kids. So these are children who are, you know, 11 to 16 years old. They'd all been physically abused and sexually abused and through horrendous, traumatic things. And I got hired there as a child and youth worker to help run this house. And I just remember thinking at the time these kids were in so much pain, and we were trained to be like very tough on them and like, don't turn your back and don't be soft because they'll take advantage. And, you know, at nighttime it was like, go to bed and close the door. And it was this very kind of strict, this is how you have to, you know, be with these children. But all I saw was little kids, right, who were just, I just saw so much pain in their eyes. And so I couldn't do that with them. So especially at bedtime, when it was time to put them to bed, I would sit on their beds and I'd rub their backs and I'd tell them bedtime stories and I'd sing them lullabies and I'd have these like moments with them, and they would kind of let their guard down and they would cry, and sometimes I'd feel like crying. And then, but I noticed the next day when it was time for me to get the kids to do stuff that they needed to do around the house, they were much more likely to do it for me. Mm-hmm. Like there was definitely a connection between compassion and empathy and compliance. Mm-hmm. And not because they were scared of me, because I'd knocked them down to level 4 instead of 5, but because they felt seen and heard and valued, and I found that time to be very precious with them. And so I definitely noticed that, to the point where the staff were like, oh, they're gonna walk all over you, you're gonna see, you're falling for their bullshit, blah blah blah. And that's not what happened. It didn't happen. And that was 30 years ago, actually 32 years ago. And interestingly, there was another staff member there at the time who had a very similar philosophy to me. And he's my husband, and we've been married 30 years. We actually met there. And then he sort of did the education route, and I did the mental health route. And now we're back together working again at Connected Parenting. But Yeah, that was the moment that I thought, oh, okay, I want to understand this. I want empathy, and compassion is literally a superpower that we're all walking around with and don't pay any attention to.
You have such a compassion for kids. It's incredible to see. It's like there's no bad children out there. Like there's no, you know, because some kids like are termed bad kids. They do bad things. They make bad choices. And then they just get this label of being bad kids. And you have this ability to see through these really difficult people with your compassion.
I feel like I always did. And I was always drawn to that. But I also feel like those kids who are labeled the bad kids also believe that story. Mm. They start to believe that they're bad. They start to believe that they're no good. And then they fall into that kind of profane energy, whether they're male or female, right? And then I'm just going to hurt people before they hurt me kind of thing. But I fully believe, and this has been more and more in my work lately, that anyone who is upset or yelling or violent or angry is in pain. They are in terrible pain. In fact, one of the most incredible strategies that I can share right now with you, with your, either your spouse or your kids, is when they're being horrible, mirror first always, and then if they're still kind of going on, keep your frontal lobe engaged by doing this. You literally, over and over again, in your head, and you have to try this because it will change the energy of the conversation. In your head, you are repeating the following. Do not say it out loud. I'm sorry that you're in so much pain. You're in so much pain and you don't know what else to do. You're just hurting right now. You're in so much pain and this is the way you're choosing to express yourself. And keep saying that in various ways over and over and over again in your head. What will happen is you're literally going to change the energy that's happening in that conversation. So on one hand, it'll be all the micro expressions, right? So if that person is coming at you, let's say it's your spouse, because it's the hardest to do with your spouse. And you just want to start defending yourself. And well, you do this, and you start that, what I call lobbing back and forth like a tennis ball. You're going to have an expression on your face of like, oh, here we go. And oh, I have stuff I want to say to you. And that's all going to be on your face. Yet that person is going to pick that up before you even say it. And that's going to set the tone for the conversation. If you are in your own mind accessing this place of compassion where you're saying, I'm sorry, you're in so much pain. You are just hurting so much right now that this is how you're choosing to handle it. It will change the look on your face. They will get a different expression back and they will respond to you differently. Just doing that. Mm-hmm. So I put it out there as an experiment, and I'd love the people listening to give you some feedback on how this works. It is uncanny that within a few seconds, you will shift the energy of a conversation. It's also an amazing way to keep your own frontal lobe on, mm-hmm. right? Because your limbic system thinks you're in danger. But if you're thinking like that, then your limbic system knows you're not in danger. And it stops sending out the cortisol and stops sending out adrenaline. And now you're going to have a very different experience in that conversation.
Do you think about energy? That's another theme that's coming up, and I haven't noticed it in your podcast or on your website, but is that something you think about more lately?
Definitely. I mean, in my free time, I'm obsessed with quantum physics. Mm. That is what I am really, really interested in. And we won't go down that channel, but everything is energy. I don't even mean it in a woo-woo way. I mean, literally everything is energy, and these vibrating little Planck particles, little tetrahedrons. That's basically what life is. And when you understand that everything's on an energetic level, it really can give you so much power and so much calm, right? In the world, you have more, you're actually a participator in the universe more than you think you are, mm-hmm. right? Versus a victim. And that's a really powerful thing. But even when we think about like the love versus fear energy, right? That so heart math, I don't know if you're familiar with, but that's where basically the heart has 40,000 neurites in it, brain cells that actually think and inform the brain. There's also brain cells in your gut, right? And when you have this alignment, it's called heart-brain coherence. And when you have heart-brain coherence, incredible things happen in your body, from your DNA relaxing to biochemical changes. And there will absolutely be a change. And there's an energy field, literally, you can measure it around all of us, especially from the heart. And when you're in that alliance, when you're in that sort of resonance, you just feel different and you're healthier and you're stronger. When we're fearful and we're upset and we're angry and we're holding on to things, we're downgrading our immune system. because our immune system thinks you're being chased by something. So if you have an infection and you're being chased by something, you're not going to worry about the infection in that moment. Your body's going to downregulate the immune system and send that energy to you running. Right? So at the very time where we need our immune systems to be super, super strong, the more afraid you are, the more you're downgrading your immune system. So focusing on the things that are working, the things that are good, finding this place in your life where you feel like a student, right? Where you're learning from your environment instead of being a victim. The second you feel like a victim, you've lost, right? And right back again to the conversation right at the beginning, when you feel like a victim, I can't believe this. I planned this beautiful thing. There's this gap between how you think that it should have gone and how it actually went. And then you end up being very wounded and upset because you were a victim in that moment. But there's no power in being a victim. So if you're a student and you're like, okay, how can I learn? And you did. You were like, okay, I'm going to try this new technique. I'm going to learn something in this moment. I'm going to walk away from this moment with a different sense of my own understanding and my own power. Now you've had a complete change on your environment. So much more is under our control around other people than you could ever have imagined. And even though that feels scary, it is a power, a good power. It's a wonderful thing to know.
There's so much education here. There's so much power in what you have actually imparted to us. And I think that as parents, and typically or historically, it's like, this is how you parent. You should say this, you should do this. These are the rules. This is what we follow in order to get or achieve the perfect child. And this is, you know, we're going into science, we're going into biology, we're going into, physics. And there's a lot more to it than just making a rule and having your kids abide by it. And so thank you for sharing all of that, because I feel like I have just learned so much more about myself, but also about my kids. Is there anything else that you think that we as parents should know in the bigger picture, or we as mothers maybe should know, you know, just to impart to us?
There's a few things coming to mind. One is the power of repair. Right, because we talked about this being very counterintuitive. So, you blow it, you blew the ice cream thing, you said you're a brat, you don't deserve anything, there's kids in the world that would love this and are starving, and which we've all had moments like that, we blow it, right? You can go back an hour later, 2 weeks later, a month later, and say, remember the other day? Mm-hmm. There had to have been more to that story. I missed something. Because you're a really good person. That's not usually how you respond. It's appealing to your child, like, I know you're better than this. This is not who you are. Like, I was missing something. You can go back and do the whole calm technique, which is great because you can actually think about the statements you're going to say in advance. That's one of the hardest things about the technique, is in the moment coming up with what to say, which takes a lot of practice. But in the beginning, repair is incredibly, incredibly powerful. Hmm. The other thing I want parents to practice is practice the calm technique just conversationally. You don't have to wait for your child to be upset. You can just chit-chat and make sure you're using that incredible connection. They're getting the oxytocin the same way. I want you to think about constantly administering this oxytocin. The other is really thinking about that gap between what you think should happen and what is actually happening. That's where frustration and depression and anxiety really come from. It's like this gap between how my children should behave and what actually just happened. So it's sort of like relaxing a little bit and just using each moment to moment, how are we going to be the best in this moment? Don't have such a huge expectation of how it's going to turn out. And when you immediately feel like, oh my God, my kid's a brat, well, how my parent did this person, oh my God, I should know better than this, just take a minute, use the calm technique on yourself, keep your frontal lobe going. My child is in pain. I'm not sure what's causing this pain, but they're in pain, and launch into the calm technique. And if you blow it, or when you blow it, you go back and you repair. The other thing is, whenever we're anxious, we're living in the future. We're inserting ourselves into a future event that hasn't even happened. And when we're depressed, we're living in the past. We're inserting ourselves into a past event and reliving it again. Why would we want to do that? But we do that all the time. So one of the biggest things that we do in our lives is rant. Mm-hmm. Right? We rant in our cars. We rant in the, oh my God, of course they left the door. No one ever thinks to put the, blah, blah. Like this, we're doing this a lot. And we either do it out loud or we do it in our heads.
I've done both. I do both.
We also, with our spouses, often have these imaginary fights. where we're telling them, I need you to know that blah, blah, blah. But there's no fight happening. We're just acting it all out, right? When we're doing that, first of all, our limbic system doesn't know that it's not real. It thinks it's happening, which means you're living it over and over again. And you just keep taking these situations and looping through them. So I want people to do what I call a reverse rant. In an absolutely reverse rant, walk around the house and go, I love this wallpaper. And you know what? I'm not going to look at those dishes. I'm going to look at the fact that my husband actually hung that up. Or you know what? My kids were so cute this morning. Like, just force your brain to shift the lens to what is working, to what is good, to what is orderly, to what is you can count on. A million things have happened today where that's going on. But if you've only got your brain set, the reticular activation system of the brain is the part of the brain that does that, where you tag something and you're looking for all the things that are, oh, there we go. I've told them 15,000 times to close the door, right? And there it is. So you've tagged it, and the limbic system just thinks it's keeping you alive. It doesn't understand. It thinks these things are important for survival. They're not, right? So when you shift that lens and you start ranting about what's wonderful, the temperature in my house is perfect. I love the way the sun is coming out that window. I love how soft these, you know, sweatpants are. I don't care what it is. You can find a million things. Do a reverse rant. And then watch what happens biochemically.
We're making healthier connections in our brains, essentially, by doing that. And, you know, yeah. There's a part of me that wants to, like, win the fight or do my little soliloquy. You know, I'm such a good ranter, but is it really serving me?
It doesn't, right? Like, it might, maybe you allow yourself to do it a little bit because it's a venting. But then stop. Like, after you've done it for a few minutes, cut it out because it's not helping you anymore. And then when your poor spouse walks in, they're going to get it because you've been having a fight with them for half an hour that he has missed out on, right? It's really important. Controlling. And then when I work with kids one-on-one, I literally give them driving lessons for their brain. Mm. I teach them that when you can control your emotions instead of your emotions controlling you, that's freedom. Mm. And that's power, right? That's power.
I want to plug your podcast too, because it's amazing. And you know, it's Connected Parenting on Apple or Spotify, I imagine, as well.
Yeah, it's on all the different platforms. All of them.
And they're just really short little podcasts that I feel like you could go to in the moment. Like, my kids are fighting. I'm going to go online right now. I'm going to listen to that podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm really big on putting all kinds of information out there. And there's more information on the website, connectedparenting.com. And for people who really want to deep dive, I mean, we've got two offices, one in San Diego, one in Toronto. So we've got a team of therapists that are trained in the connected parenting model. And then I also, which I'm really excited about, I have an online course, which has been really fun. So I do all these videos that kind of take you through, because there's so much more, like this is like this much of
it,
right? And we even have some professional videos where we recorded like before and after when you don't use the calm technique, what it looks like, and then after what it looks like. And then part of that is like regular coaching calls with me, and also a phenomenal Facebook group where people are just in, at various stages of like working through connected parenting, and they're all helping each other. And I pop in and out of that group, and it's like a living, breathing model that I keep adding to. And it doesn't, I don't have it set. So it runs out at 90 days or something, like it's yours forever.
Amazing.
Another way.
Yeah. Amazing.
Well, I feel like we could take this on and do like 10 more podcasts with you, because there's so much to it. So at some point we would love to have you back, and we can focus in on so many of these topics specifically. So thank you so much, Jennifer. We really appreciate you being here today and giving us all this wisdom and kind of a little bit of hope. I feel like I'm leaving with a little bit of hope of, I'm going to go home and maybe hug my kids a little bit and use some of these tools. I'm going to try them out, test them out. But your books as well, Connected Parenting, You're Ruining My Life But Not Really, Surviving the Teenage Years. Those books have all of the information that you have just spoken about today and more. So I would recommend that people get those books. I am a testimonial to the Connected Parenting book. It's worked, and it's just such a beautiful thing to use. So really, again, thank you so much for all of your wisdom.
Oh, thank you. I loved it. I really enjoyed it today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
That's a wrap. Thanks for listening in. Be sure to follow us on social media at the Afterglow Podcast Official, and take a minute to leave us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, and Google. Lift a sister up and share the Afterglow with others who are seeking their courageous second act.